Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 60.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Patrick Adams. Patrick is the author of the best-selling book, Avoiding the Continuous Appearance Trap. He is an international speaker, coach, and consultant. Patrick has been delivering bottom-line results through specialized process improvement solutions for over 20 years. He's worked with all types of businesses from private, nonprofits, government, manufacturing, ranging from small businesses to billion-dollar corporations. Patrick is a proven leader and a highly experienced consultant with a specific niche focus on organizational strategy and leadership development, which brings a uniquely human approach to sound team building practices, creating consensus, and enabling empowerment. He motivates, inspires, and drives the right results at all points in a business process. Patrick is also the host of the Lean Solutions podcast, which you should listen to as well. Here's our guest, Patrick Adams. All right, well, we're here today with Patrick Adams. And Patrick, we briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do, and how lean or continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Absolutely. You know, thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate you and what you're doing through your podcast, and very happy to be a guest. So thank you for having me, first of all. Just a little bit about my background. Start out with just my family. I have three kids. I've been happily married for 22 years to my high school sweetheart, which I'm very proud to say. I spent about 8 years in the military, and after I was medically retired from the United States Marine Corps, I landed a job as a production supervisor at a plant in a small city here in West Michigan, and just fell in love with manufacturing. Just loved the idea of starting with a raw material and moving it all the way through the process to a finished good and being able to deliver that to a customer. So that was my introduction to manufacturing, and then shortly after into Lean and then Six Sigma. But I like to talk about my first introduction to Lean always being when I was in high school and I worked at McDonald's. And that's always my, yeah, you too. Okay.
That's where I started as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know it at the time. Right. But, you know, obviously as I learned more and more about lean and continuous improvement, those connections to my old days back as a fry cook at McDonald's, you know, I started to make those connections. And every time I walk in there to order myself a Big Mac, I always look back, you know, at the kitchen in the back, and I watch the different things that are happening and just remember, you know, how the lean principles were being applied even back when I was a young high schooler. So that was my first introduction. But, you know, I like to talk quite a bit about my career in working for two specific companies, which for those of you that are listening that know about my book, Avoiding the Continuous Appearance Trap, I mention and talk very extensively about these two companies that I worked for. But one of those companies had a true culture of continuous improvement, and the other one had what I like to call a culture of continuous appearance. And so many of my lessons over the years have come from those two companies. And that's really, you know, where the majority of my work has been based on, is just the learnings that came from working between those two companies.
Starting out McDonald's, I'm thinking about how great the standard work was. It was well written, easy to understand. And then training. They had a training program. It wasn't just, hey, sit beside the guy making cheeseburgers. You learned how to make the cheeseburgers in the order according to the standard work chart. So
that's right.
I started out my days there as well. So that resonates with me. So before we get started, Patrick, we always ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from one of their favorite leaders. Can you share with us your quote and why you chose it?
Sure. I chose a quote by John Shook, and there's a very specific reason why I chose this quote. But it is, lean management is very much about asking questions and trying things or encouraging others to try things. Lean management itself is not much about providing the right answers, but it's very much about asking the right questions. And I think this is a really, really powerful quote, because you know, in working for those two companies that I mentioned, you know, one of those companies had a true culture of continuous improvement. And I have people that ask me, you know, well, why can't you just give me the steps? Why can't you just tell me what they were doing? Why can't you just give me a roadmap for success then? You know, if you worked there, if you experienced it, why can't you give me the roadmap? And, you know, what I tell them is, if I give you the roadmap, if I give you that, your first inclination is going to be to go implement it, right? It's going to be, let's go start with step one, and then we'll go to step two and step three and step four. And if I give you those and you go implement those solutions, then, you know, it could be very detrimental to your organization, because you have to ask yourself the right questions that drive you to the right answers for your organization. The organization that I worked at, and a lot of different organizations that I've worked at since, you know, they have their own specific industry, their own specific teams that they work with. The culture is different. The time is different. And so instead of giving you what I think would work for one company and hope that it's going to work for your company, I think you have to ask yourselves the right questions. And then by asking the right questions, it becomes more of an evolutionary process of learning rather than an implementation process of correcting, right? So it becomes the beginning of scientific thinking for your organization. And by asking the right questions and really being genuine and honest about the answers, it's going to drive you through reflection and through learning to the answers that you need, the roadmap that you need for your organization.
I think that's a great point, Patrick, because by asking the right questions, it allows you to engage the correct mindset in order for the idea or the methodology or whatever problem you're trying to solve to take root and take hold. It's almost the metaphor I think about is it's almost like a good question tills the soil so that you can plant mm-hmm. the seed and allow it to grow.
That's right.
John Shook, everybody's that's listening to this podcast, I'm sure is aware of his work. That's a great quote. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
One of my goals for this podcast is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences. So can you tell us a story about how or why you chose this profession that you've embarked on?
Sure. You know, as I mentioned, I got out of the Marine Corps and I landed a job as a production supervisor based on my leadership. I didn't really have any experience in manufacturing per se. But as I said, I loved the idea of manufacturing in general, of making a product, you know, from a raw material. And then as I started to learn more and more about continuous improvement and lean tools and techniques and just lean culture in general, it made me really excited, you know, just based on, I guess, my own life growing up. I had a little bit, I'm going to share some personal stuff here, Chris, so bear with me, but I'll bring it back around. But I had a bit of a rough life growing up, and I had a few mentors and coaches that poured into my life. And because of the time that they spent with me, you know, my life was forever transformed. And they empowered me. They equipped me with the tools and the skills that I needed to be successful. And when I went into the Marine Corps, I spent time in the Marine Corps, I learned a lot about leadership and what it takes to be a good leader and what it takes to be a bad leader as well. But, you know, I had a lot of leaders even in the military that poured into me. They empowered me and they equipped me with even more skills and tools that I needed to be successful. And then when I moved into manufacturing, I started seeing opportunities to use those skills and those tool sets to help empower other people and really pour into other people and help develop them. And then obviously, you know, building on that, as I started to learn about what it, you know, about lean and continuous improvement and what it takes to really be successful in on a lean journey, it begins with respect for people and being able to engage and empower team members and really listen to the people that are closest to the work. And so I started to make all of those connections and really it got me excited. I became very passionate about the idea of empowering and equipping others for positive change, whether it's in an organization where, you know, we're working with people to change an organization or even in their personal lives. I mean, I've had so many stories of people that we've worked with that have broken down and started, you know, to even cry because of just the change that's happening in their work environment and how that's affected them personally. So I think that, you know, for me, that's why I chose this profession. And that's why I get so excited about it, is just because of the life changes that happen, you know, for people personally through the process.
I love that, Patrick. I think in my own personal experiences as well, starting out on the shop floor is that I would call a junior leader in an organization, and understanding that lean was not about telling people what to do. It was about asking them from their perspective how they viewed the problems and equipping them to solve them and say, hey, we should do something about that together. Let's go.
Right.
Or show me. That makes sense to me. That resonates with me as well. I think also it goes into this mindset of the best leaders that I've ever been around were really good listeners, and they always knew the right question to ask at the right time. And it was short. It was succinct. It was something as simple as, what do you think?
That's right.
Then knowing that when I spoke, they genuinely cared what I said. They weren't just asking me to say, well, I asked him and he told me. It was, they internalized it. They breathed it back to me. And I felt like I was on a team as opposed to just out on a lonely island dealing with these problems that somebody else gave me.
That's right. So true. It's one of my favorite questions to ask somebody when I'm coaching them is, what do you think? And unfortunately, there's so many leaders out there that try to, you know, that feel like they have to have all the answers, and that they have to, they can never ask a question because, you know, maybe they'll come across like they don't know what they should know. But in reality, you know, it's a team effort, and those companies that utilize their entire workforce and don't just rely on two people to be the two problem solvers in the company. Those are the ones that are going to be successful. So asking people, what do you think, and allowing them to, you know, or empowering them, I guess, to help solve problems is really key. So
the interesting dynamic is you have to ask yourself, if I don't show up to work, does the product still ship, or does the process still go out, or does a loan still get approved? And if the answer is, if I don't show up to work and it still goes out, then you're a question asker. You are the person that needs to ask questions from your expert, that is the person that if they don't show up, it's not going to go out. It's not going to do. And you need to enable that person. So if you're not sure where you sit, just think in terms of, if I don't show up today, does the product still go?
That's right.
And then you know who the experts in the organization are.
That's right. I agree 100%.
Well, you've had a lot of success, and you've documented that in your experiences, in your talks, in your podcasts, in your book. But there, you know, we people that do continuous improvement work understand that it is not always rainbows and unicorns. It's not always fun stories and successes. There are setbacks, and I imagine that you've experienced that as well. Can you share with us what you consider your biggest setback with lean or continuous improvement, and what you learned from it?
Yeah. What I'd like to do, actually, as you're asking that question, I'm thinking back to, you know, there's many different stories. I'm never afraid to fail. And I think that that's also what, you know, makes a good continuous improvement practitioner, is someone that's willing to step out and learn as they go, right? Experience things and experiment. So I think about so many different failures that are out there, because that's really what, you know, made me who I am today. So I do have many. I'm sure many of your listeners can think of many as well for themselves. But I guess I'm going to go back to one story. It's a true story that I actually share in my book, at the beginning of my book. And it's such an impactful story for me because I think about it all the time. Because, and I see leaders who have the same behaviors that I had when this failure happened. And so it's embedded in my mind. But I was a young production supervisor, and I like to say that I was young and inexperienced at the time. A lot has changed since then, but I really wanted to prove myself to upper management. And I saw, you know, other people that were getting promoted. I saw other people that were getting a lot of attention from upper management. And I thought, you know, if only I could make a good impression to upper management, then, you know, I would also be one of those ones that, that could be promoted. And, you know, I had a lot, again, I was young, I was inexperienced, definitely did not have my eyes set in the right direction at this time in my life. But I knew at this time that the only way I felt like the only way that I could climb the ladder, right, at this corporate job was to really learn what was important to management and to the executives. And so I would watch them when they would come out on the production floor, and I would look for what they liked, when their eyes lit up, when you could tell they were excited about something. You know, so for example, and again, I walk through this in my book, but they would go to an area where it was very well lit, you know, machines painted very nicely, everything looked clean, and they maybe nice visual boards with metrics that, you know, for us at that time could never have any red, always had to be green, right? So these green metric charts on the wall, and then they also like to see continuous improvement activities, right? So any projects that were being worked on or anything like that. So because I knew this, you know, I went back to my area, which at this time was, you know, dark, and machines were old, hadn't been painted in a while, and we didn't really have any kind of visuals or anything like that. So, you know, I went through and got approval to put new lights in, paint the machines. We throw some boards up, and I put some charts on the boards and started tracking. But, you know, I'm just careful to make sure that our goals weren't too difficult so that we could always be in the green, right? And I threw up some really cool posters with leadership quotes on them and different things, and 5S and whatnot. But, you know, I think about this, even as it's coming out of my mouth, I think about just how terrible this was, that I did these things, because while I was so busy trying to look good for myself personally, right, I was trying to climb the ladder. I was thinking about myself at the time. I didn't ever ask the team what they wanted. I never really even considered the people that were running the machines and the equipment. I stopped spending time on the production floor. I tried to get into the conference rooms where the leaders were and, you know, get as much FaceTime as I could, but I stopped listening to my team. And the other thing that I did, even during 5S activities, I think about this, I took away some of their tools because I saw them laying around and I felt like they were clutter. And so they didn't even have the tools that they needed to do their job. So you can imagine what happened, right? I mean, the team was not happy. And over time, we started missing shipments. People weren't showing up to work. You know, turnover was on the rise. My department was literally falling apart. These employees, my team, they saw through these false intentions that I had, and, you know, that I really didn't respect them, that I didn't genuinely respect them. It was clear to them that I was there for myself and not for the team. And, you know, I tell you this story because, not because I want everybody to think how terrible I was, but it was a learning opportunity for me. As a young, inexperienced supervisor, I learned what didn't work very quickly. And I also learned, you know, the importance of respect for the team and engaging them and involving them from the beginning. You know, I've learned a lot since then, but I definitely look back on that as one of those points in where, you know, there were so many learnings from that, you know, including just my own personal wants and in, you know, the corporate world and, you know, so anyways, that would be my biggest pitfall or my biggest problem that I had in my career.
Patrick, I appreciate your vulnerability to share that. I think sometimes people, when they see an author or someone who's had a lot of success in continuous improvement, they automatically assume that they've been that way from inception. And the reality of it is that everyone who's done this has probably fallen into that trap or made those mistakes in the past. And the fact that you're able to be vulnerable about it, share it with everybody and share the pain that you learn. I mean, I can imagine working in that area and being one of the folks that had their tool taken away. It's the exact opposite of what lean and continuous improvement really is.
That's right.
And the realization that, yes, I was wrong is probably the most powerful step to growth and growth mindset when it comes to improvement. So thank you for sharing that story.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. There has to be a moment where it all clicked for you, an aha moment with lean and continuous improvement where you realize, oh, wait, this is a competitive advantage. What was that moment for you? And talk about how you discovered that.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't a probably something that happened overnight. I think it would be something that happened over time as I continued to learn and develop myself, as a leader in the manufacturing world, and then after manufacturing, into other industries. But so I think it was, again, more of an evolutionary process, like I talked about earlier, even for myself, of just experimenting and learning and reflecting on the things that were working, the things that were not working. But I think, just like I mentioned, respect for people has always been the key for me. And I think that that's really what I would say sets me apart and sets my company apart. You know, as we go into these different organizations and we work with people in all different industries, you know, from nonprofits to multi-million dollar companies, it always comes back to the same thing, you know, respect for people. And I think that, you know, I just think about one story that we had in a company that we worked with where the employees were very, very frustrated with the leadership and with the direction of the company and what was happening, and turnover was through the roof, and this company was really, really struggling. Well, they had this one supervisor who had told me that he was thinking about leaving the company, and I asked him, just give it some time. You know, let's see where things are going. The leadership is committed to change, and let's give it some time and just kind of see where it goes. And we started to work with his team, and his name was Sean. And I still remember the day we'd done a couple, lots of coaching over a period of time and a few Kaizen events with his team. And we were at a executive report out for one of the Kaizen events. And I remember Sean coming into the room, and he looked around at the leadership team. And we always have the team themselves do the report out. I don't ever talk at the report outs. So Sean stepped up in front of the leadership team. And I kid you not, he couldn't even say a word because he had tears in his eyes. And this is a big burly guy who had been working in this industrial, you know, manufacturing plant for years. And he said, for the first time in my life, I told my wife this morning on my way to work that I was excited to come to work. And it just, the whole room was just completely quiet, and everybody just kind of sat there, you know, watching and just like on the edge of their seats, waiting for the next word that would come out of Sean's mouth. He had them just, you know, tied in to right at that moment, because it was just such an impactful statement that he made. And, you know, from that point forward, Sean was just totally bought into continuous improvement, true continuous improvement, and really has been the driver at that company for driving. And the result has been a great culture of continuous improvement that he's helped drive within his team. And so again, that I think that that's just a great moment that I want to share with your listeners, that I think is another impactful story that I have with my journey in continuous improvement.
He was ready to quit.
He was.
I mean, seriously, he was transparent about it too. He wasn't like sneaking around in a planet. He's like, "Hey, I'm looking." Right?
He was very open about it.
Well, you brought up your company, Patrick. Can you share a little bit about the work that you do and who you work with and kind of like what the sweet spot is for you and your business for helping people?
Sure. Me personally, I've done a lot of work in the manufacturing world, right? So I mentioned manufacturing, but as a company, we have a company purpose, you know, and it aligns with my own personal purpose, which I've mentioned earlier, to empower and equip people for positive change. And everything that we do is really aligned to that. We also have our own true north of being the first global choice for process improvement solutions in the world. Well, I guess globally that would make sense, right? But that as far as what we do, we provide process improvement solutions for businesses anywhere from, you know, a small nonprofit organization to a large, you know, multi-million or billion-dollar company in all different industries. You know, we do administrative work with companies. We do work in manufacturing, you know. So our team, you know, again, can go anywhere in the world. And we have a really, really great training platform that we're getting ready to officially launch. We've been doing training for a number of years, but our Lean Solutions Academy will be launching towards the end of this year, as well as our Lean Solutions community. So both of those will launch to help support lean practitioners and managers and operators and anyone else that is anywhere on their lean journey.
And by providing solutions, you don't come in and fix it for them. You're actually helping them understand how to fix their own issues, right?
That's right. I always love to say this because people always look at me crazy when I say it, but my job is to work myself out of a job. The only way that that lean is going to be sustainable in an organization is if the team themselves, the organization, owns it. And it doesn't need to rely on an outside consultant to be there every day to maintain it, or every year, or whatever it might be. So, again, people look at me funny, but you know, that's really my job. I like to go in, I like to help assess where the problems are and then help coach the team through scientific thinking, right? To learn, experiment, reflect, and come up with solutions on their own, and then again sustain those solutions and walk away. And you know, obviously we have some really, really amazing partnerships with many different companies, and they call us back for lots of different things, but you know, our main goal is to really help them to own the solutions themselves.
Well, and all these journeys that you've been on and these experiences you've had, do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong?
I do. I would say probably if I had to think of one, I would say it would be the cookie cutter mentality. You know, I love what Toyota did. I love the Toyota production system. I teach it. I coach on it. So don't get me wrong. Toyota is amazing. They did some really amazing things. But when I see organizations that try to say, well, here's 10 steps to what Toyota did, let's follow these 10 steps so that we can do it ourselves. Well, because Toyota did it, let's do it. You know, because Toyota used this tool, because Toyota, or you could put any name in there. It doesn't need to be Toyota. You know, there's a lot of great companies out there that have done some really amazing things from a continuous improvement perspective. But you can't take what one company has done and think it's going to work for your company. Again, I mentioned this earlier, but you're a different team. You might be in a different industry. It's a different time. So you have to come up with your own solutions that are going to work for your company, for your team. And so I guess that would be my one pet peeve, is just when I see organizations that are trying to use that cookie cutter approach and just apply what. And now also I want to mention, Chris, I'm not saying that benchmarking is a bad thing, because benchmarking is great. I love benchmarking, but don't just take one thing because it worked for a company and try to apply it. Experiment with it and see what works. Be flexible, be open to change or tweak what another company is doing to make it work for your team. Don't try to force a square peg into a round hole.
That resonates with me, Patrick. When you're talking about that, I call that cookbook lean, where it's, hey, here are the ingredients, here are the instructions. We have to follow them to the T, but you know, in order to get what we need. And you can't follow a recipe when it comes to lean or continuous improvement. It is, you got to discover, you've got to learn, you've got to apply scientific thinking. You can walk through a manufacturing facility that has really great visual management, but you can't copy their signs and hang them in yours and say, boom, we got visual management. There's an intent behind it that you have to understand in order to be able to apply it properly in your environment.
That's right.
What do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far?
That's a good question. I'd have to probably say servant leadership. which, you know, I would call lean leadership as well, but servant leadership. I love to tell this story about a time when I was in the military. I was actually in SEER school, which, for those that don't know, it's survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. There are some things that I'm not allowed to talk about, which you know, for which understandable. But this one story that happened while I was in SEER school, and this is a SEER school is a POW training camp. So if a military person finds themselves in a POW camp, or then how do you respond? How do you, you know, so training for survival within a prisoner of war camp is what SEER school is. But when we were there, we had gone for a few days with very limited food and water. And, you know, we were very hungry, and we were outside in the yard, and the enemy military that was there brought some soup, and it smelled amazing. I think it was rabbit soup. It was amazing. And like I said, we hadn't eaten for a few days, so everybody was really hungry. And they intentionally lined up the officers at the front of the line and the enlisted personnel in the back of the line. And normally in the military, they teach you as an officer that you eat last. So the enemy was intentionally lining us up the wrong way to see what would happen. And I remember that the captain was the highest ranking person in the camp with us, and they gave him his bowl of soup first, and then a few officers after him got their soup. And then the soup was accidentally, right? I say that with quotation marks because it was intentional. They dumped the soup over onto the ground. And so only, I don't remember what the number was, 10 or 15 officers actually received a bowl of soup. And then all of us enlisted didn't get anything. And so this captain stepped up and said, and started to give his soup to some of the enlisted people. And so he took his bowl and spread it probably between, you know, 3 to 5 enlisted people. And then the other officers quickly followed suit and did the same thing. I just remember thinking to myself, you know, I would follow this guy anywhere if it, you know, just this, he had the, all of those servant leadership, characteristics, and in everything that he did, that was just one example. But I always remember him and just the fact that he would always put other people ahead of himself, you know. And so again, that's something that I've tried to also emulate in my own life, and also in coaching, you know, other leaders how to be a good leader. So servant leadership would be the one thing that I've learned that I feel like is probably the most important.
My grandfather was a senior NCO in the Army, and one of the things that he passed on to me with his experiences was that if you have rank, and you've earned that rank and done it the right way, you never have to pull the rank. Like, people mm-hmm. will follow you based on the way that you lead, not by the bars or the stripes that you have on your uniform. So
that's right.
But that applies to the civilian world. If you lead in the right way, people will follow you. You can lead without authority if you do it the right way.
That's right.
And a lot of lean and continuous improvement professionals don't necessarily have a department. They have to influence and use it. They can't rely on authority. They have to, you know, lead without authority and lead with influence by helping the people that they're charged with helping.
That's right. Absolutely. I agree 100%.
What piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with lean or continuous improvement, Patrick?
Yeah, another good question. I would say seek to understand but do it where the work is being done. I see so many people that try to lead from an office or from a conference room, and you know, I really have to help them understand that they have to go to the place where the work is being done. And you know, some, obviously for some companies, if it's an IT company, it may be in an office or in a conference room. But where is the value add work being done? I would say my advice would be go there and go there with a purpose of understanding why things happen the way they do. Take time to observe. Don't jump right in and start changing things. Really watch how they do things, ask questions, really listen for understanding of why things are the way they are. I've had so many times in the past where I've went in and started changing something just to find out that, there was a purpose in why it was there. And I didn't quite understand that well enough before I started to make changes. So I would say really, really listen to the people that are doing the work and understand things and gain their buy-in by asking questions and involving them in the process.
Do you have a separate piece of advice that you would give to somebody that's maybe a little bit further along in their career?
I would say never stop developing yourself. You look for opportunities for self-development, no matter how much you think you know. Podcasts, mentors, coaches, books, never stop learning because you're definitely far from knowing everything there is to know.
When you believe that you're ripe, that's when you begin to rot. You always have to have that growth mindset.
That's right.
Do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you'd like to recommend to our leaders? I mean, obviously, The Continuous Appearance Trap is probably one of your favorite books, but
it is at the top of my list.
Other than yours, whose book would you recommend right now?
I think right now I would definitely recommend my friend Katie Anderson's book, Learning to Lead, Leading to Learn. I have that right on my shelf here behind me.
Yeah, up top. Yep.
Yeah, right up top here. But definitely she also wrote the foreword for my book, but just an amazing person, an amazing leader. And, you know, just the stories that are laid out in her book and just the so many learnings just really align perfectly with where we should be when we're on a lean journey and moving towards a true culture of continuous improvement.
So let's go. I conned you into talking about a peer's book, but talk to me about The Continuous Appearance Trap. What can people expect when they pick up your book? What do they expect to learn?
Yeah, good question. So the book is broken down with 12 questions. If you remember my what I talked about earlier with John Shook, and I'm not looking to give anyone the answers, right? But my hope is that as you go through the book, that you can, if you answer the questions honestly, and each one of the 12 questions actually breaks down into more questions. There's an assessment at the end of the book. There's a free assessment you can download on our website. And so that's also available for free. But the questions are the key. And anyone that's reading through the book is going to be able to answer the questions. And by the end of the book, you should have some pretty good understanding of where to start for your own personal, if you're somewhere along your journey, maybe already further along in your journey, the book should spark some ideas around what else you could be working on or other opportunities to continue to improve. But also, as I mentioned, I talk about those two companies throughout the book as a case study, the company that has a true culture of continuous improvement and the other company that has the culture of continuous appearance, as I call it. And I use those questions throughout the book and the case study to really help readers to understand, what really should be happening or work through what could be happening in their organization if they answer those questions genuinely and honestly.
Great book. Available on Amazon. If you're a Kindle Unlimited user, you can get the Kindle version. Yes. I looked beforehand. So definitely something that folks want to check out. I got one more question. It's the magic wand question. And What I mean by that is we know that in lean and continuous improvement, magic wands don't exist. But if they did and you were working with a group or facility, what would you typically wave that wand at first?
I would have to say I would probably wave the wand at leadership engagement first. I think that getting leaders to engage at the place where the value add work is being done would be probably the number one place that I would start. There's a quote out there, probably everybody knows it, defining insanity, right? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. So many companies think that they can continue to manage the same way, doing the same thing over and over again, but they expect a different result. and it's just not going to happen. One of those 12 questions that I laid out in my book is, where are your leaders spending their time? One of the greatest barriers to establishing a true culture of continuous improvement is that leaders avoid spending time in the place where the value add work is being done. And I tell this story in the book, but there's a plant manager that came to me, and he said that he couldn't get out on the production floor. And I said, why can't you get on the production floor? And he said, I can't even go out there for a minute because I get bombarded with questions. People, you know, start asking me questions, and a 5-minute walk, you know, planned walk turns into 2 hours. And, you know, and I think about that. It's like, wait a minute, why are you getting bombarded with questions? And, you know, shouldn't that create a little bit of maybe alarm that your team feels like they're in the dark? Why do they have so many questions that you can't even walk on the floor? Is it because you're only at, and I'm not saying that this in a way, a punitive way to this leader, but I'm thinking to myself, you know, how often are you out on the production floor? Because if you're only out there once a month, and when you come out there, people change the way that they work, and they're wondering why he's out there, because is there something wrong, or they don't see you very often. So they have all these questions that they've been dying to ask for the last month. You know, all of these things start coming through my mind. And I think, what if you were out on the production floor every single day, and you had those questions were being answered as they were coming in, versus people waiting, you know, for a month in order to ask you those questions. And so I think that, you know, again, if you continue managing the same way that you always have, and you're expecting something else, something different to happen, then you're heading in the wrong direction. You have to be intentional to change your habits as leaders. And if you change your habits, then, you know, you'll change the behaviors, you'll change the outcome, you know, of what's happening with the culture of your company. The result is going to be the culture that you want if you change those habits. So that's one of the questions that I ask is where are leaders spending their time? And I think if you can genuinely assess yourself as a leader, where are you spending your time? And if you can change that and spend a little bit more time at the place where the value add work is being done, amazing things can happen for your organization.
Yeah. If you're a senior leader in your organization and you're listening to this podcast, the advice here is run a Kaizen to reclaim some space that's got some inventory that you don't need in it. Then have your industrial maintenance department set up a cubicle on the shop floor right beside the area that you're responsible for, and make it big enough for two people, and have your manufacturing engineer share that space with you. You will build trust, you will solve problems, and you will operate at a lightning fast pace.
That's right. So, I've seen many companies do that, where they just shut down their supervisor or group leader office. They close the doors, and all the group leaders and supervisors move right out to the production floor, and they set up camp right out at the, you know, out where the work is being done, and they learn quite a bit very quickly about how their operation really is being run.
That worked out. I mean, that's how I, when I became a senior operations leader in my group, that's the first thing that we did. I shared my cubicle with my manufacturing engineer, and in a manufacturing environment or a distribution environment, you start to learn the rhythm of the building. Like it's by sound. You understand that, there should be forklifts backing up and beeping. There should be, conveyors rolling. There's things that you hear that are indicative of that. And when it stops, that's when you have a problem, and you should notice. And usually whenever it stopped, I'd look up and I'd see the bottom of my manufacturing engineer's shoes just heading right out to where it was. But the other thing was, people will bring you their problems. They will come to you and talk to you about what they're concerned with. And it builds trust, not just from a process standpoint. They'll come talk to you about when they want to have a day off, they'll come ask you about it, and they'll tell you why. Like, hey, my kid's going to be playing their last football game in their senior year. I want to take off early and spend it with them. It's like, get out of here. All right, go. Right. Those kinds of things. And when you build that level of trust, you have a team that is connected to solve problems, but they look out for each other too.
That's right.
So Patrick, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do or if they have a question for you? Also, can you talk a little bit about your podcast and what people can expect when they tune in to listen to an episode?
Sure. So I'll start out with where you can go. So anybody can connect with me on LinkedIn. And I'm very vocal on LinkedIn. So if you want to send me a message or comment on a post or anything like that, I love to have conversations and discussions out there. Also, you can go to our website at findleansolutions.com and you can learn a lot about our new Lean Solutions Academy and community that we'll be launching this year. Also, you can learn about the book too, which you mentioned, Chris, is available on Amazon, but you can find that on our website or go to avoidcontinuousappearance.com. As far as the podcast goes, our podcast, we drop an episode every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we've had some really great guests on the show. The podcast is available for downloads on our website. I think you can also go to the leansolutionspodcast.com, but it is available on our website, and all of our show notes, you can download the transcripts, links to tools and templates that are talked about on the show. All kinds of great information is shared through the show. So that's available again on our website, findleansolutions.com.
Patrick, thank you for the work that you're doing in the lean and continuous improvement space. Thank you for your service to our country as a Marine. I'm grateful. And I hope we can have you back again when you write your second book.
Absolutely. I'd love to. We're hoping to release the audio and a workbook to go along with the book this next year. So look for that.
All right. Well, you're doing the great work, and I appreciate everything you're doing for the lean community. And thank you for giving time of yourself to join us on the podcast.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
I want to thank Patrick for being a guest on the podcast today. I know that I got a lot out of the conversation, and I hope that you did as well. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links on how to connect with Patrick if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating for the podcast or a review. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.